Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Bharadhari. Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Bharadhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vana Chari. Yamuna Tira Vana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Bharadhari. Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Bharadhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vana Chari. Yamuna Tira Vana Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari. Jai Om Vishnupad Padamahamsa Purujakacharyam Asatara Sattasi Shriman His Divine Grace Lacey Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Anantakoti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Om Vishnupad Padamahamsa Purujakacharya Asatara Sattasi Shriman His Divine Grace Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasati Thakur Prabhupada Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopina Shamakun Radhakun Giri Govardhan Ki Jaya Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jaya Shri Maya Pradamadvip Dham Ki Jaya Ganga Mayi Ki Jaya Jamuna Mayi Ki Jaya Ganga Mayi Ki Jaya Bhakti Devi Ki Jaya Tulsi Devi Ki Jaya Arinam Sankirtan Yagna Ki Jaya Chaitanya Gaur Premananda Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jaya All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru, Sri Gauranga, all glories to Sri Prabhupada. Thank you again for coming to our Sunday program. Who is here for the first time again? Coming from all parts of the world and country? Is this your first time to a Krishna temple or just the first time to New Raman Reti? Whoever raised their hand. You can all speak at once. I can hear five voices.
First time here.
First time here, but anybody that coming here for the first time? Never been to a Hare Krishna temple?
First time here,
but you've been to temple before. Okay. We have a secret language in the Hare Krishna movement, and I want to make sure everybody understands it. I can't think without my phone. Sorry. If anybody has a phone, please take it out and turn it off. If you have a phone, please turn it off. I'm doing that with mine and also trying to figure out what verse I'm on. New Raman Reti is a unique community, isn't it? Very, very unique community. I was here when we bought the property. Some of us were here. And at that time I was a Sankirtan leader. We had probably maybe 30, 40 Sankirtan devotees. And we were distributing books every day. 7 days a week. Blissful time. And we had so much extra Lakshmi. Srila Prabhupada had been talking for some time on the need of establishing Varnashram. That was his final desire. So he was telling devotees to purchase land. And so we had some extra Lakshmi. So we started looking. And I still remember the person that found it. Hung out at the camp. I can't say he went to school, but he hung out at the campus. And he found this piece of land, and we purchased it. And at first it was just, we were growing peanuts and a few cover crops just to keep it fertile. And then slowly we decided to move from Gainesville to New Raman Reti onto the farm. And at one point, the deity, I don't know if you all know this, at one point the deities moved to Gajendra's brother's house, Alan Winkle, and the deities lived there for a while. And then we slowly bought him a single wide trailer. And the deities lived in the single wide trailer for a while. Soka Krishna and Shama Priya lived in the camper, and they took care of him for years. living in a little camper over in the corner. And we slowly built a lean-to onto the one single wide. When I remember what year it was, 96 we built this part here? Akuti, 96, who remembers? Is anybody here? The porch on the porch. Yeah, we had a triple porch. Ended up with a triple wad. You know you're from the South if your house is mobile and your car is not. And I think it was 96 we moved here, or 95, something like that. So we've got this nice facility, and many devotees were attracted to come here. So a little history. I don't know why I said that, but just felt like it because Mother Moksha said I'd been here for a long time. So 42 years. Each day I try to read 25 pages of the Gita each day. If you do that, according to the one Gita that I checked, you'll read the Gita every month. It's interesting. And it doesn't take that long. And if there's any students here that are actually going to school, if you read, I think it's three pages, I figured it out, if you read 3 pages a day, every day you're in school, by the end of the school you'll have read the whole Gita. So when we look at it in terms of, you know, little drops of water wear away a rock, it makes it a little less daunting. When you look at a book this big and think, oh my God, I can't even start. But if you think that, okay, 25 pages or 3 pages, something like that. The same is true with the holy name. I figured it out one time on my calculator. This one's broken, so I use the one on my phone. And if in order to chant 16 rounds a day, which is the goal of most devotees, is to chant at least 16 rounds a day, and it takes you an average of 7.5 minutes to chant one round, that means it takes you 2 hours to chant 16 rounds, which is 8.3% of the day. I saw a bumper sticker the other day and said, if 10% is good enough for God, why does the IA government need more? So we're only asking for 8.3. And then you add in the other 1.7 as a donation to keep the temple going. We break things down into simple math. It makes my day easier, right? If my day looks complicated, like, oh my God, I got to chant all my rounds, you think, well, it's going to take the whole day, but it's actually 8.3% of the day. So anyway, today we had a little gathering for the Bhaktivedanta Institute, and I wasn't part of that, but I was involved there, so I didn't get a chance to complete my 25 pages, so I thought I would just share the verse that I'm on. And that is a very interesting verse, number 28 of the 7th chapter. And I'll go through it quickly and then we'll make some comments. I'll try to do the Sanskrit. Yesham tvan an katam papam jardardanam punyam punyar karmanam te dvandva maha nirmukha bhajate mam tatavata. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are freed from dualities of delusion, the dualities of delusion, and they gave themselves in my service with determination. You probably noticed that verse, dhritavata, that word dhritavata, with determination. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Kind of embarrassing because it's on the board and I have to make sure I don't make any mistakes in my reading here. Those who are eligible for elevation to the transcendental position are mentioned in this verse. For those who are sinful, atheistic, foolish, and deceitful. Oh my gosh. I'll say it again. For those who are sinful, atheistic, foolish, and deceitful, it's very difficult to transcend the duality of desire and hate. Seeing the word atheistic, I just like to share a little something with you before I forget. I get a lot of, I won't say a lot, I get some information from Christian preachers that I see that they send me lecture series like on YouTube and stuff. And I use one of their answers. When I was in Hong Kong recently, we were doing Govardhan Puja programs every night at the different Indian families that live in Hong Kong. Most of them are from the Sindhi families. They're all business people. And one man wanted to lead a bhajan, and I didn't know him, so I asked the devotee, I said, is it a bona fide bhajan? I don't know what it is. He said, yeah, it's okay. So I let him lead the bhajan, and when he got up, he sat next to me and said, I'm an atheist. And I said, oh, that's wonderful. That's amazing. That's totally. I don't have enough personal faith to be an atheist. I'm really impressed. I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. I said, that means you're completely convinced there's no possibility of a God. That's amazing. And then I just continued up my conversation. I learned that from a Christian preacher when he was apprenticed by an atheist. Oh, that's wonderful. I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. It's a good way to counteract that when you really think about it. Because atheist, in other words, if you're a theist, that means you have some, you know, you have faith that there's a God. I mean, to have no faith, absolutely convinced. And he kind of like, I didn't have to do anything. He just kind of walked away and merged into the crowd and was more or less over. Though those who are sinful, atheistic, foolish, and deceitful, it's very difficult to transcend the duality of desire and hate. Those who have passed their lives in practicing the regular principles of religion, who have acted piously and who have conquered sinful reactions, can accept devotional service and gradually rise to the pure knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So much there, huh? Only though, I'm just going to read, because I think that you can see it. Are you catching everything here? Is everybody catching? Those who have passed their lives practicing the regular principles of religion. What is the, what something's happening to this? And all of a sudden it's squeaking. You hear that? Okay, maybe it's a, okay. So what are the regular principles of freedom called? I gave away the answer, dang it. Regulative principles of freedom. In other words, by practicing the regulative principles of Krishna consciousness, one achieves a sense of freedom, where he's no longer bound by the desires of this material body, because we overcome them. And who have acted piously and who have conquered sinful reactions. The idea of conquering sinful reactions is that what we read here is that we have received this material body due to our previous activities. This body is the cause of this particular body is due to the activities I performed in my previous life. And so I have this particular body. Today we had a nice little gathering at Hananand Sarit's. I don't know if you know Hananand Sarit. They work with Krishna Lunch. And the Sunday program is at their house. And so somehow or another, they had 30, 40 people there. And I told them, I said, you know, I took birth in North Dakota. I asked, anybody ever heard of it? Right. And I said, one time I experienced 98 below zero. 98 below zero. Wind chill factor, 98 below zero. And I said, because we're explaining, you know, as you sow, shall she reap? You know, according to biblical statement, as you sow, you reap. I said, I'm reaping a particular result. And so I must have sown something in the past to get this particular result. And I said, whatever it was, I approached God. I'm really sorry. Please don't put me in North Dakota again. And it's just too cold there, you know. So who have conquered sinful reactions, through the process of following the regular principles, one comes to the point of being able to conquer sinful reactions It basically means tamsatiksha sabharatam. It basically means vacha vegam manasakrita vegam jiva vegam utara pasta vegam. That the person who can control the urge to speak, the mind's demands, action, the pushings of the udara pasta vegam, the pushings of the tongue, belly, and genitals, these people are considered to be Goswamis, and it isn't like an ashram, it's just a person that controls their senses. And so one who is able to do that through the practice of religious practices actually literally conquers sinful reactions, because this body is a sinful reaction to our past activities. And so in order to overcome those, we have to follow the regulative principles of religious life, and then we're able to overcome literally conquer those reactions. Those reactions, what we have coming, all those material desires that we feel are unfulfilled desires that we've had for many, 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 many lives. We don't even know how long we've been carrying them with us. And once we get to that point, can accept devotional service and gradually rise to pure knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When we understand, there's a nice verse that it's in the 17th chapter, I think, or 8th, 15th. Yomam evam sangmang mudo gyanati purushottamam, that for one who knows me, Krishna speaking, one who knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is considered to be the knower of everything. And because he is the knower of everything, therefore he engages in the devotional service of the Lord. So in other words, once we understand, once we come to this point of practicing religious, or following, or living our lives by practicing religious principles and engage in pious activities, or especially here, transcendental activities, become able to conquer over the reactions of our previous life, and then come to the platform of pure knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we'll be able to engage in the devotional service of the Lord, and we actually, because we know what we're doing. So the Prabhupada didn't want blind followers, he wanted followers that were knowingly doing what they're doing, and that's basically what this end of the seventh chapter describes, that I know, although Agyata Sukriti sometimes is said to be the beginning of devotional service, and Agyata Sukriti can be the beginning of someone knowingly, or Agyata Sukriti meaning knowingly or unknowingly engaging in devotional service is there, and a certain amount of benefit is there, but one who knowingly engages in devotional service, knowing the purpose behind why they're engaging in devotional service, and is willfully extending themselves to do such a thing, they get greater benefit. Just as those who are in knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the laws of nature, reaction, action, reaction, and the principles of religious life don't do it, then they get a greater sinful reaction. So knowledge is a two-sided sword. One, it helps you, but if you deviate from it, it can give you a little tough time. Then gradually they can meditate in trance on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the process of being situated on the spiritual platform. This elevation is possible in Krishna consciousness in the association of pure devotees. For in the association of great devotees, one can be delivered from delusion. This is again, as Mukhya was explaining, the benefit of... I was going to do my old mantra, but I just said, okay, skip that one. The benefit of having such a wonderful community that we live in Nirvanamriti, and any place in the world, practically speaking, that we go, we have association with devotees in the most unusual places. You know, you can find Hare Krishnas. And that type of association purifies the heart. Because the ultimate goal isn't to become... Bharshana Maharaj is explaining today that the ultimate goal isn't just to become a devotee, but it is to become the servant of the servant of the servant of those who are the servants of the devotees. And if we have this type of mentality, because sometimes we have lofty goals, you know, on the material level, and then, okay, now I want to be a devotee. But what does it really mean to be a devotee? It means to be the servant of the servant of the servant. And as far removed as you are, the more affection, the more seriously Krishna takes that. The desire to become spiritually desireless of any type of position. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in Harinam Chintamani that the devout Vaishnavas had to be very careful of desiring fame. That's one of his, when he discussed the 10 offenses to the chanting of the holy name, he brings that point out, that this desire for fame can erode one's devotional creeper. And so the further away we get, you know, I don't want to say further away, it's actually the closer, it actually becomes the closer you get to Krishna. In other words, the more we engage in the service of the devotees and the devotees of the devotees, and the further down the line we get, the more beneficial it is for our spiritual upliftment. It is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.2 that if one actually wants to be liberated, he must render service to the devotees. Mahat Sevan Dvar Ahur Vimukte. One who associates with materialistic people is on the path leading to the darkest regions of existence. Tamo Dvaram Jositam Sangha Sangam. All the devotees of the Lord traverse this earth just to recover the conditioned souls from their delusion. And persons do not know that forgetting their constitutional position as subordinate to the Supreme Lord is the greatest violation of God's laws. Unless one is reinstated in his own constitutional position, it is not possible to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead or to be fully engaged in this transcendental loving service with determination. So this is, it's kind of like, the trying to be God, in other words, it's not like we're sitting around thinking, you know, should I extend my forearms, or I should not extend my forearms, or, you know, am I the controller, the owner? But what we do is, of every single thing in the world, but what we do is that we take a little segment, we take a little portion, and then we try to become the owner and the controller and the enjoyer of that little portion. And that is a seed that creates sinful desires in the heart to try to exploit that which does not belong to us. I was just reading the other day that the thief, everything is owned by Krishna, and so anything that we take outside of the service that we can utilize for serving Krishna is dishonesty. It's not being honest. We're not using it in the service of Krishna. It's just like if you go to a person's house and they say, oh, you know, please, whatever you need, you know, you start walking out with the furniture and stuff, people will get, that's not what they mean. They mean, you know, utilize it, you know, within the confines of my house. You know, it's not that you can just like start taking the silverware and the furniture and, of course, the devotees don't have TVs, so there wouldn't be any TVs going on. So it's not like that. It's like, you know, utilize what you can within this perimeter. In the same way, that's what Krishna is saying, that Isavasam idam sarvam yakin chin jagajam jagat. That Krishna is the owner and controller of everything, and bunjataka isasudanam, that we're given a particular quota with this body, but that quota is not meant to, see, we got that particular quota with the idea to enjoy and control. But if we come to the point of Krishna consciousness, then we use that quota to engage in the loving devotional service of the Supreme Lord, and rather than condemning us, it actually liberates us. It's just like, I've given this analogy before. We heard this, I think, on a lecture from Prabhupada, or at least some devotees, that say, for example, you're on parikram. Of course, now there's not very many thorns on the parikram path in Vrindavan. It's all asphalt, so there's not that many thorns anymore. But if you're walking on you're doing parikram around and you get a thorn in your foot, the thorn is causing a lot of pain, and it's causing a big disturbance. What you do is you go to a thorn tree and you break off a thorn from the thorn tree, and you take that thorn and you pick the thorn out of your foot. So one thorn is causing distress, and the other thorn is causing relief from the distress. And so this is the principle of the material energy. Material energy is neutral, just like that thorn is neutral. In your foot, it's a disturbance. In your hand, removing a thorn, it's pleasure giving, I guess you could say, or it's relief. It can give you relief. So in the same way, material energy in itself is neutral. We were explaining it today at Hanan and Sert's house. There were two new guests that had never ever come before. And I was saying that material energy, because it's Krishna's energy, Daivi Hesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Dantiya, it's Krishna's energy, Daivi Hesha Gunamayi, it is my divine energy, although it's my inferior energy. It's not a superior energy, it's an inferior energy. It's just like the library, the library is a superior energy of the government, and the prison cell is an inferior element of the government. So they to the prison, but they're all connected to the government. One is used for elevating people's knowledge, and one is used for those who just can't follow the rules anymore. They go into jail. But they're both governmental institutions. So in the same way, material energy is Krishna's energy. It's inferior energy. It's meant dharantiya. It's meant to confine those who don't know how to behave properly. And if they learn in that what do you call those reformatory institutions? If they're actually able to reform their consciousness, if we are able to reform our consciousness within this environment of material energy and take that same material energy and utilize it in the service of Krishna, then that same material energy will release us from the suffering that we're undergoing due to our choices through that which gave us this material body. This is the process of Krishna consciousness, opening these things up, opening up this whole process of Krishna consciousness. Now, interestingly enough, I think it was like several visits ago, I gave class here. I don't remember the verse, but I do remember the question. And the question was based on this verse, and it said, one of the devotees in the community came to me, and he said that, because I don't remember exactly what I said in class, but he said that that persons who acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are freed from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service without return. So this is like a qualification to engage in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then I happened to come across a verse in, I hope I'm in the right chapter, in this 16th and 18th chapter, that it explained that in Sarvadharmam Pratyajya Mamekam Saranam Vraja, that if you just surrender unto me, I'll protect you from all types of sinful reactions. Do not fear. So we have so many sinful reactions coming, so how is it that if one isn't on the level of acting piously in this life and whose our sinful reactions are completely eradicated and all these things, how is it that we'll be able to come to devotional service? And Krishna says that simply by that act of engaging in pure devotional service, engaging, surrendering unto Krishna, leads one. It's like what do you call it? Reducing the sentence. What do you get out of jail early? I don't know what they call that.
Probation.
Yeah, they reduce. Probation. They reduce the sentence. If you take the drug course, we'll give you out. We'll let you out 6 months early, right? So that's what Krishna's talking about here. That those who actually surrender on Him, they'll actually come to this point of Krishna consciousness, which is a wonderful state. So I had a plan today that usually I always go to the very, 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 very end and then past the end, and then you start getting sidelong glances of like arrows from the manager saying, get off the chair. No, that's not true. It ain't me.
I saw the song for Mukya. So in case somebody has some question or anything you ever wanted to ask a Hare Krishna that you never ever asked before. Mahananda Prabhu, it's nice to see you in such good shape.
Oh, thank you.
I was quite concerned when I heard you had a heart attack. Yeah.
You mentioned a few times about, you quoted some scriptures that were showing why we engage in devotional service. And I appreciated that. And that made me think of a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, which is the opposite, where Krishna talks about why we don't engage in devotional service. And I thought I might like to mention that, where Krishna says, for one who is too much attached to sense gratification and material opulence, who is bewildered by such things, the resolution to engage in devotional service does not take place.
Yeah.
I just thought I'd do
that. So, Bhogaisvaram prasatanam chaya putas chetasam, then samadhi, this ability to become fully absorbed. And that is desire for sense gratification and material opulence. Those who are too attached, those we become too attached to material sense gratification, and we become too attached to material opulences. These are stumbling blocks. These are stumbling blocks on the path of spiritual life. There's another one that's 250. I got the right place. It's funny, you read it every day and you still don't know where it's at. Anyway, there's a nice verse that there are stumbling blocks on the path of spiritual life, right? But when you come to the conclusion, of Krishna consciousness, that this idea of sense gratification, becomes pale. I mean, the verse I just came up. Another one, two verses just came to mind. Vishayava nivartante nira harasideyanam, that the taste for sense gratification may remain in the heart. Even as devotees, if we have to be honest in order to advance, and there are many desires in the heart. Of course, if we can control those desires through our practices of Krishna consciousness, that is very beneficial for us, because we know from the third chapter, if we feed those desires, they only increase. Like a blazing fire, the more fuel you place on it, the more that fire will increase. And so as devotees, we learn that philosophy. Materialistic people, they think, no, I just have to get more, I have to do more, I have to do it again, I have to have another drink, I have to have another whatever. And it just gets more and more and more, and they bury themselves more and more into the darkness of ignorance. But a devotee knows that, because Krishna was asked by Arjuna, why do people engage in sinful acts? Even unknowingly, as if engaged by force, like there's some other outside force. And so Krishna tells them, is this kama esha, krodha esha? Is this lust only, or desire only, or Arjuna, which is the all mahapapam, it's the all-devouring sinful enemy of the living entity. But he teaches, and then in that section, he tells us that when we give gratification to the senses, that it only increases the desire. It doesn't mitigate it. It doesn't fix the desire. It only increases the desire, just as putting fuel on the fire. And then Krishna is very kindly, Prabhupada actually said Krishna is very kind, because he tells us, Indriya Mana Buddhi. He says that the sitting places of this lust, I always like to change it to desire, because lust doesn't sound so, maybe we should use it, but it's kind of hard. So lust or desire. He tells us where the sitting place are, indriya buddhi, indriya mana buddhi, the senses, the mind, and the intelligence. These are the sitting places of lust. So Prabhupada explains that Krishna has given those people who are interested in understanding how to conquer over desire information of where the enemy is. I often give an example, like in the old days, you knew when people went to war, the Kauravas knew where the Pandavas were. It wasn't like they were hiding inside of, their weapons inside a backpack, walking into a bus in a marketplace. They were actually fighting, so they knew where they were. If you don't know where the enemy is now, like with terrorists, how do you fight them? So, but we do know where the enemy of our spiritual advancement is, and that is in the senses, the mind, and the intelligence. And so the senses bring in information, the mind develops information, whether accepting or rejecting, and then the intelligence gives us a discriminatory process of how to gain access to that. And so Krishna explains at the end of that section, Statma Tvam Indriyanyaya Niyamya Bharatarshavaha, that therefore from the very beginning one should regulate the senses by anyway, it's right here in the Bhagavad Gita, 42, third chapter, 40. Regulating the senses and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. And interesting enough, Prabhupada says in the purport, he says, the Lord advised Arjuna to regulate the senses from the very beginning so that he could curb the greatest sinful inferior lust, which destroyer, in the verse it says, destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. And here it says, destroyer of the urge for self-realization, and specifically knowledge of the self. In other words, every person has in the human form of life, has an urge to understand what's going on. So when one engages in the gratification of the senses, it dulls that urge. So we don't even want, we don't even care anymore. We don't even care what happened. It's just like we give up on those types of spiritual quests. And so now, leading up to your end of your question, Mahananda Prabhu, in that Bhogaiswaram, that material enjoyment and material opulence, these are considered, and we learn how to utilize words, these are obstacles in given in the Bhagavad Gita, and they're also, you can also say they're challenges, and you can also say that they are opportunities. Because they are obstacles, and they remain obstacles as long as we don't take care of it. And if we learn that they're actually an opportunity for us, because each and every one of us has a different obstacle. The body's changing at every moment. And I'm 65 now, and it turned out that they did still feed me and still need me when I turn 64. So at least they fed me. I don't know if they need me or not. But so I remember being a 5-year-old kid. I mean, I remember being even a little younger than that. Did you know I heard a lecture? Prabhupada said he remembered being 6 months old sitting on his sister's lap. Prabhupada remembered being 6 months old sitting on his older sister's lap. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is like next level, And so, and I remember having certain things that I want, certain desires. I remember then turning into a 10-year-old and having certain things. I thought I was going to get a new bike for my birthday, but I got a used one. Boy, was I upset. But that's another thing. That's one reason to join the Hare Krishna movement. Revenge. And then when I turned 16, I needed a car, and then I needed college money, and then you need this, and you need that, and then all of a sudden you're in the Hare Krishna movement, and you just wish you had your own closet to sleep in at night. Or you didn't have to, just share clothes with everybody. Like all the dhotis were in one barrel, all the kurtas were another, all the socks were another. You didn't even own clothes, And then you're going to go from there, and then when you're 65, then it's a whole package. It's another whole package. It's not changed. It's just that the body's the material desires aren't going away. They're just changing. It's just changing from A to B to C to D to E to F, and hopefully I'll make it through the alphabet, man. And then don't have to start all over because I've actually achieved all and conquered over all those different ones. So Krishna says in the 50th verses of the 18th chapter, Machita Savadurgani Mat Prashada Tadishasi, that if you actually just surrender unto me, if you just come to me, then you'll cross over all obstacles by my grace. Oh, that's a word I wanted to look up today. I'll do it next time I give class. Remind me. Because there's a difference between grace and mercy. I was talking with Varshana Maharaj about this, you know. We always beg for the mercy, we beg for the mercy. But we have the grace of the Lord. And I just wanted to, I'll take a little time this week to look up the meaning of those two words. Because he says, "By you'll overcome these obstacles by my grace." So this, now when we get to that Bhogaishvara Prashaktanam Chayapita Chetasam verse, it's in a specific section of the Gita which is talking about sense control. It's telling us, just like the turtle, Kumadam, what's that? I don't remember the verse. Anyway, just as a turtle withdraws its limbs within its shell, or the first one that Krishna, you know, Arjuna asked the question, what is the symptoms of somebody that's situated in a transcendental position? How does he walk? How does he talk? How does he do all these things? Vrajan Prabhu, if you ever have a chance, go through his surrender to me, and he explains exactly what those different things mean in practical daily life. And the first thing Krishna prakashaya ekam krishnam lokam adamadai sheta sheta tata krishna prakashayati, that if the one who is transcendentally situated, prakashaya ekam krishnam lokam, that he is no longer invested in the desire for sense gratification. He no longer invests, knowing it to just be a product of the mental imagination. It's a mental imagination to think that one can actually become satisfied on a material level within this world. I have a business card, as I told you before, and this has my name, email address, and on the back it has a little blurb from the blurb, I know what you call it, a little sentence, a couple sentences from the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, and it says word for word from Srila Prabhupada, our very Prabhupada asks, what is Bhagavad Gita? And so Prabhupada says, he answers it by saying, the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita. And when you think of this thing, it's like very beautiful. In other words, like, what is the microphone? You tell it what the purpose of it is. The purpose of the microphone is to amplify sound. You can just say it's a piece of metal on a plastic stand. But if you give the purpose, then you have vital information, or more important information. So within that explanation, the first thing he says is that the purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to deliver mankind from nescience, to deliver mankind from the nescience of material existence. Inasmuch as Arjuna was in darkness or in a distraught because of the battle of Kurukshetra, every person in the material world is distraught in this material environment. It says, our very existence is in the atmosphere of non-existence. Actually, we're not meant to be threatened by non-existence because our existence is eternal. And so when we come, when Krishna tells Arjuna the answers to that, prakashaya ekam, no, what is that? Not, that's the wrong one. Pajadi dakama sarva parthaman, I quoted the wrong verse. Pajadi dakama sarva parthaman, manogatim, the chariot of the mind, mana, vata. The chariot of the mind will take us into so many different ideas. You know, when there's a little bump in the road, something, the material nature will make you an offer. If you just do this, then you'll be happy. If you just do like this, then you'll be happy. Or if you just do like this, you'll be happy. But as I was explaining recently, I don't remember where it was, I think it was today actually, that the problem isn't material, the problem's spiritual. We're in a spiritual vacuum. We're in the spirit. We're outside of our natural spiritual environment, and there's no possibility of achieving success, you know, of overcoming these things with a material solution. It only can happen with a spiritual solution, and therefore Krishna gives us all this information. Where is this enemy? You know, where is the enemy? Why, and then why is it so strong? Why is it so strong? Because the enemy, this desire for sense gratification, is only a perverted reflection of our natural love for Krishna. You understand that lust is a perverted reflection of prema. When the living entity, originally in the spiritual world, has unlimited, you know, natural love for the Supreme Lord, but when the living entity misuses their independence, they fall into material energy, and as they enter into material energy, they come under the control of the three modes of material nature, which perverts that. It is, the way it's explained in the purport, Prabhupada says, just as sour tamarind turns milk into yogurt. So in the same way, material atmosphere turns prema into kama. And then when we're in that environment, so we can understand, we have unlimited desire as a spirit soul. As a spirit soul, we have unlimited desire for happiness and for satisfaction. But now we're in an environment that doesn't offer it. But still we search for it because that's our nature. Ananda maya byasat. By nature, we're pleasure-seeking living entities. And if that's what we're going to do it either here or up there. So when we're here, we do that. So in order to overcome that, we really have to fight hard. We're going up. We're literally going upstream, and we need help. We need help from our friends. We need, as Srila Prabhupada was explaining in this purport, that we need the association of devotees, because in the association of the devotees, one's faith is developed deeper and deeper. It's by that association that enhances and is the propellant of our faith. Because you know, without the association of devotees, what hope do we have? What hope do we have? And then I'll just say one last thing, and that is we have the association of Srila Prabhupada at our hands at any moment, at any time, day, or place, or circumstance. I even have it all on my phone. I love my phone. And just in case you didn't know, the average person turns their phone on and looks at it within 5 minutes upon waking. I just saw the statistic. The average person. So I want to be above average. So we'll stop here. Should I ask for one more question, Wilga, or send?
It's up to everybody.
What? It's 6 o'clock, and I'd like to be timely. If anybody has any little thing, otherwise we can have prasadam and honor prasadam, is the proper term. I can't. Oh yes.
I was wondering. I don't know if I just wasn't paying attention, but when you were describing the difference between mercy and grace, I was wondering if you...
Yeah, I'm going to work on that. I was saying I'm going to work on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I know the meanings, mercy and grace, but because Krishna uses those words by the mercy of the spiritual master, and Krishna says, by my grace, I want to know the actual definitions of those words so that I can utilize them for my spiritual growth and progression. Yeah, I want to just see what I'm doing with that. Yeah. That's what I was referring to. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.